But first, Jojo Moyes. She's a prolific writer whose career really took off when she published Me Before You, which was made into a very successful film starring Emilia Clarke. You might also have read The Giver of Stars, a firm favourite of many readers here. Well, Jojo's new book is about a chaotic family home in London with multi-generational drama, bad plumbing and a dog. It's called We All Live Here and it's published by Michael Joseph. Jojo Moyes, good morning to you.
Morning, Miriam. Thank you for having me.
Great book again. I know a lot of readers here in Ireland have it, and our own Marion Keyes is a big fan of yours. For those of us, though, who haven't read your books, I categorise them as warm, featuring really strong women, and they're funny. But how would you categorise your books?
Oh, gosh, that's really hard. I mean, somebody said to me recently, oh, you write romance, don't you? But actually, I haven't written anything based around romance for about four books now, I think. You know, they tend to be more at the moment about female friendship and the travails of life at various ages. There's always a love story thrown in, but I guess in this one, I just wanted to look at, I think, you know, we're called the sandwich generation, the women who are, you know, holding up the sky, looking after kids, looking after elderly parents, somehow trying to have a love life and look after ourselves in the middle of it all, but usually surrounded by a fair amount of chaos.
Absolutely. I think that will resonate with so many women listening this morning. So look, tell me about this family setup in London in this book, starting with Lila. Mm.
Okay, so Lila's our main protagonist. She's a 42-year-old writer of nonfiction who wrote a book about how to resurrect a marriage that had gone stale. And 2 weeks after it was published, her husband ran off with a woman she calls the bendy young mistress, who also happens to be a school mum at the same school that Lila has her daughter. So she's coping with a lot. She, into this, her mother has recently died and her stepdad, a rather rigid elderly man called Bill, who can't quite cope with chaos, has moved into her house because he's too grief-stricken to live alone. She has these two daughters, one of whom is 16 and going through a lot at school, and the other one is 8, who seems to know all sorts of inappropriate rap lyrics, and a dog that never stops barking and who creates such havoc with the neighbours that Lila is forced to take bottles of wine round to them kind of every other week. And into this already complicated family arrives her biological dad, who is a former Star Trek ripoff actor from Hollywood, who's now in his 70s and has basically exhausted every ex-girlfriend, every line of credit, every work opportunity, and after many years' absence, decides to land back into Lila's life.
Wow. And Jean and Bill actually are brilliant characters, I think, Jojo. They're really different. And the tension between them, though, it really adds to the book. It's also quite funny to see two old guys being jealous of each other.
Oh, it made me laugh so much writing them. Jean is basically a kind of giant man baby. You know, some actors I've met just never quite get over themselves, even in old age. And Jean is very definitely one of those. And the thing that I really wanted to do was just play off these two old men who've basically borne a grudge against each other for 30 odd years, but have them shoved into the same house. And yeah, I made myself laugh writing those scenes, which is always a good sign, even if it sounds a bit mad.
And you also have, of course, teenage drama with Celie and the complications in her life. Funny enough, though, the chaos of a blended family, it's actually a positive in her life. And was that important to you, I suppose, to show that family these days can mean all sorts of things?
Absolutely. I mean, I grew up in a blended family. I have two half sisters, one half brother, two stepbrothers, and we all really like each other. I mean, it's a kind of chaotic shape of a family, but I think there are loads of positives in it. And I think when I look around me now, families have morphed into very different shapes for various reasons. And I just wanted to reflect that and as you say, show that it doesn't always have to be problematic. The relationship between Jean, who has objectively been a terrible, terrible father, and Celie, his granddaughter, turns out to be one of the most positive, if unconventional, relationships in the book. And I wanted to show that sometimes grandparents can succeed where parents, you know, are doomed to fail.
Yeah, and you show that so well. Also, I think what we get with Celi, it's a bit more complex, more nuanced than she's not just a moody teenager. Why did you give her some of the chapters?
Because I wanted to show that we always think as human beings that we know what's going on in somebody else's head. We think we understand their motivations. And when we meet Celi, she is on the outside a typical, you know, grumpy teenager. She's rude at the table. She stomps off. She misses school. She smokes weed and her mother is at her wit's end. But actually, when you're forced to view the world through Celi's eyes, you see that what she is dealing with is enormous and just so difficult. And it's impossible for her to talk to her mother because she's trying to protect her mother from her own feelings because she knows that her mother's gone through this terrible divorce. So I really wanted to show that we always think we know, but actually we should be a bit more open-minded because when you see the world properly through somebody else's eyes, it often turns out to be quite a different thing indeed.
Yeah, that's actually so true. There's romance now as well. There's Jensen. He's the kind gardener who asks all the right questions. And there's a single dad, Gabriel, at the school gate. Lila, she has some options here.
Yeah, I have to say I did worry about giving her two options because it's quite hard to kind of create chemistry with one person in a book, let alone two. But I don't know, I guess in the age of the dating app and the swipe right culture that there are always going to be more than one possibility out there for you. But I also wanted to show just how confusing it would be for someone who'd been married for a really long time to find themselves out in the kind of dating wilderness and to see, you know, what she thought she was doing. And she gets it pretty wrong as well as pretty right.
And I know you've spoken in the past about the value of female friendship and Lila's best friend, mm-hmm. Eleanor. She's great. She's there to listen and advise and to argue with her. But how critical, Jojo, are your own female friendships in life?
Oh, my God, they're so critical. And I'd say weirdly, in an unexpected way, they get more critical as I get older. There's something about the company of women, all who've been through some stuff, all of whom have probably dealt with some of the same issues. And there's a kindness and a supportiveness and an openness, I would say, that I have found just invaluable in my own life. And my own best friend is a bit of an Eleanor, although I hasten to add without Eleanor's activities. And we've been friends since we were 16. And she has no hesitation in telling me when she thinks I'm going wrong, but she'll also be the first person to pick me up and the first person to kind of tell me a childish joke. And there's a great comfort in that. And it's something that I appreciate more and more as I get older. I don't know how women who don't have women friends navigate the world. I really don't.
And actually, that's lovely because that friend of yours you've had since you were 16, she knows you when you weren't a famous writer, which I think is invaluable as well.
Oh, completely. And also there's something about somebody who knows you when you're at school. You have the same stupid jokes. Mm. You know, she can still call on me to do my impression of being an orange. And and it also just reminds you to stay silly, you know, because we can't take ourselves too seriously in life. And if you've got good girlfriends, I can guarantee you've also got some good laughs as well.
How do you do an impression of an orange? I'm sorry, I'm just wondering.
It's impossible to show on radio. All I can say is somehow it works.
Okay, I believe you. For another day when I meet you.
Yeah, one for a Zoom call, I think.
Defo. Listen, some of those close friends of yours, they're also writers. And I know you credit, for instance, Sophie Kinsler and Jodi Picoult as being go-to readers and friends also.
Yeah, it's a really supportive writing community. I mean, you mentioned Marion Keyes earlier. Mm. Yeah, Marion, Sophie, Jodi, they've all been absolutely crucial. I gave Sophie the idea of me before you, long before I'd finished writing it. And I said, oh, I'm writing this book and I just don't know if it's any good. It's a bit weird. And she rang me later that day and she said, look, I've talked it through with my husband and we both think you should write this book. We really think you should do it. So I always joke that I should be paying her royalty. But also they're just people who've watched your career go up and down and they've been with you through the births of children or, you know, the end, in my case, the end of a marriage. And they've been just supports both professionally and personally. So I feel very lucky to have them, because I know not all industries have such nice, uncompetitive people.
Yeah, it's great. It's the same here in Ireland. Marion Keyes often speaks about how supportive, you know, a lot of the writers here are as well, all the women. But look, one thing you said also, Jojo, that I found particularly interesting in an interview with Woman's Hour on the BBC, and I suppose it was about older women in their 40s and beyond, but they've so much responsibility because at a certain stage in their lives they have teenagers, but they've also often got an aging parent, jobs, houses, costumes maybe for a school play. What are you noticing about those women?
Oh, just that they exist and they're invisible to the rest of the world, but not to each other. And, you know, for a couple of years, I remember, you know, in our late 40s, me and my best friend just used to end every conversation with, "It's a lot, isn't it?" And I think there is, you know, I don't know, and I'm sure some men exist out there who are doing this, but I don't know many men who are looking after elderly parents as well as doing all the other things. And every woman I speak to between kind of 45 and 55, say, who is my friend, has an endless to-do list of, you know, keeping track of the emotional health of their teenagers, or looking after elderly parents, or trying to hold down a job, trying to keep up a social life, trying to stay fit. That's a key one, because a lot of us are going through menopause, trying to kind of cope with the health issues of that. It is relentless, but also, I think there is great humour involved with women. I think, well, perhaps it's just my friends. I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's not just mine. But you have to laugh about it. I mean, you just have to, you know, if you didn't, you'd cry. but yeah, it's a lot. And there's definitely, I read a thing once that once you get to 60, a woman's life satisfaction increases dramatically. And I don't know whether that's because a lot of those pinch points, the children still being at home, the elderly parents needing care, have kind of faded off by then. Maybe 60 is a point when women have a little bit more freedom. I'd be interested to find out. But instead of saying it's a lot now, me and my best friend just say, oh, not that long till 60.
And then hopefully, yeah, not always the case, of course. It's interesting, though, with men, isn't it? Because a lot of men do, listening probably this morning, go, no, I look after my elderly father or mother. But by and large, we have liberation. And yet women in all areas of life, we do tend to do more than men. Why has that happened and why doesn't that change? I often think that.
I think there's definitely something in ourselves, like from when we first have babies. And I know I had to fight the urge to say, no, I'll do it, because somewhere in my head, I probably thought I understood it better, or I did it better, which is clearly not true. But there's a sort of maternal instinct that kicks in. But I think also, if women have taken time off to have children, by the time they're in their late 40s, early 50s, it's the men's careers that have progressed and the women who have taken a back step. So if there is an elderly parent to look after, it tends to fall to the woman. I think structurally, it's kind of geared against us. And emotionally, I don't know, I hate to say it, but often if it's like an elderly woman, she doesn't want to be looked after by a man. She's more comfortable with a woman. And, you know, daughters, since time began, have been expected to look after their parents. I don't know how it changes. I think there are a lot of men out there doing more, which I'm immensely grateful for, and being a lot more emotionally switched on. But I know my brain, when I was married, my brain was much more used to juggling 8 million things, from the vet's appointment to the school uniform to the World Book Day to the, you know, does my mum need to go to the hospital kind of thing. Whereas my husband's brain was much more, you know, one thing at a time, just very focused, very linear. You know, I do wonder whether there's a sort of neurological part to this as well.
Really interesting. We'll resolve it one day, Jojo.
Who knows?
Listen, I read a piece as well you wrote about doing interviews, you know, for this book. And you said that because there are some similarities, some interviewers, of course, automatically assume you're Lila, or she's a version of you. And I mean, does that happen to male writers, do you think?
I don't think it does. I don't think it does. I think women are much more often asked whether things are based on their own life. I cannot remember reading or listening to an interview or reading an interview with any of my male writer friends where they've been asked if the romantic relationship was based on them or whether the setup was based on them. I mean, I'm thinking about Philip Roth wrote relentlessly about things that really mirrored his own life. And I don't remember anybody challenging him on it. They just said he was America's greatest living writer. So it is a little frustrating. Also, I've written 17 novels. And when I write about aircraft carriers in 1946 or, you know, horseback librarians in Kentucky in the Depression, everyone assumes it's research. But if I write about a woman who's just got divorced living in London, then it's got to be me. But that's, you know, I guess I maybe I was naive. I'll make sure I don't write about any female writers again.
ever. Listen, I have to ask you about the dog Truant, because I know you're a big animal lover, aren't you? You're mad about dogs and horses.
I am. The one thing I've learned about writing animals into books is you never kill the dog. I receive more upset emails when I killed a dog in a book about 15 years ago than even when Will Traynor died in Me Before You. Sorry if that's a spoiler, but it has been out for 13 years. Animals are such a part of my life, and everyone in London has a dog now anyway, so it just felt natural to include a dog in the story. But yeah, that dog would drive me crazy, but it was a useful addition to the chaos.
Yeah, no, loved him. Now, you've published so many novels at this stage. Is the next idea, is it always pushing through? I mean, do you now already know what's likely to be next? I mean, you have an incredible work ethic.
I do know what's next. Yeah, I think it's from my years in journalism. I think what journalism does is teaches you to see a story. And so it's really easy, and I say that I should really touch a piece of wood, but so far it has been really easy for me to come up with story ideas because I see things in the news or I listen to snippets of conversation or I think about something that I've heard about and I can just build something from there. I think it's when people ask, where do your ideas come from? I just think, you know, you could give me... This is going to age me, but I don't know. And I don't know if you have the same thing in Ireland, but did you ever have an A to Z?
Yeah, of course.
The little book of all the maps. Yeah, of course. So basically, when I was training to be a journalist, they'd give us a sheet, rip out a sheet from the A to Z and say, go find two stories. And I feel like that's how I approach novel writing. You could give me a house or a family or a crime, and I could come up with a story based on that. I just need that little page to get me going.
Finally, I mean, you made the transition. You've become this hugely successful writer. Do you pinch yourself sometimes? Are you just incredibly grateful that it worked out so well for you? You have obviously this work ethic, this incredible talent, but other people want to be writers and it just doesn't work for
them. Doesn't happen. Every day, Miriam, literally. And also because success came late and was pretty hard won, if I'm honest. You know, I wrote 3 books before I had one published. And then I wrote 8 books before I got anywhere near a bestseller list. So I became successful in my 40s. And I think if it doesn't come handed to you on a plate, there is not a day when you're not grateful for it. You know, I do that gratitude thing every night of finding 3 things that I feel immensely grateful for. And I tell you, I never have trouble filling it because my life as a writer has so far exceeded anything my 14-year-old self could have dreamt of that. Yeah, I do pinch myself. And even if it ended tomorrow, I'd still feel like I had the most fantastic run. I mean, you know, way beyond what most people get. And a lot of really talented people don't get it. So, yeah, I think the stars aligned for me and I'll forever be grateful for it.
Oh, well, so well deserved. And I loved your new book. It's called We All Live Here by Jojo Moyes. It's published by Michael Joseph. It'll be in shops from Tuesday. Jojo, it was a joy to speak to you. Thank you so much and continued success.
Oh, Andrew, thank you so much for having me, Miriam. Cheers.
Mind yourself. Take care.